Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint. Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Man, we got a great show coming up for you here on Montana Talks this morning. They trained in Montana for their space mission. Last week, you saw their first ever successful commercial space walk. Well, the Polaris Dawn crew actually trained for that mission right here in Montana. About a year ago, I spoke with the mission pilot, Scott Kidd Poteet, as they were getting ready for that space mission. And so after watching their successful space walk last week, I thought, man, I need to follow up with Kidd Poteet and talk about their training in Montana and their successful mission in space. So the Polaris Dawn mission pilot will be with us next half hour of the program and the second half of the program this hour. Plus, how many of you saw this really cool T-shirt that I got? I shared a photo on Instagram and elsewhere. It's, you'll see the Save the Cowboys, Stop American Prairie Reserve sign in the background. And then I've got my Montana Coal T-shirt. Well, you can get one too this Friday afternoon in Roundup, because there's a big pro Montana Coal rally taking place in Roundup this Friday afternoon. We'll tell you about that with Roundup's mayor here in just a second. But first, I got an alibi for you. I want to play this soundbite from South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem's speech in Great Falls, Montana. She was there on stage with Navy SEAL veteran Tim Sheehy at that campaign rally Sunday.
Senator Tester's so bad that he doesn't even know what a she is, and he is. We know what a she is, right? Listen, Tim Sheehy is not going to let mediocre men take away opportunities from our exceptional women. He's going to make sure that he protects women's sports, and he always knows what a she and a he is here in Montana, because that's just not something that we're going to sit here and argue about. It's just a matter of fact.
Right. Yep.
Listen, John Tester is just exactly like a politician we used to have in South Dakota. I don't know if any of you remember Tom Daschle.
Yep.
Remember him? He used to go to Washington, D.C. and vote for every tax increase, every government mandate. He wanted government control of health care. He voted for all the regulations and supported socialist agenda. Then he'd come home and get in his 25-year-old vehicle and drive around and say, golly shucks, geez, I'm just like you, and visit all of our counties and have coffee in the local cafe. And people kept voting to him for him until he was held accountable. Until somebody called into the carpet and started talking about how he voted. And that's exactly the opportunity that you have here.
All right, that was South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem alongside Navy SEAL veteran Tim Sheehy Sunday in Great Falls. I've got more highlights, photos, and more. Go to MontanaTalks.com. Plus, there's a couple of other great clips from her speech. I had to boost up the audio a little bit, as you could probably hear there, so you could hear it over the radio. If I have time later this hour, I'll play another clip or two. But first up, right after this, it's great to have Mayor Sandra Jones in studio with us, the mayor of Roundup, Montana. She's hosting this pro-coal rally in Roundup this Friday afternoon. She'll tell you why and give you more details right after this.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
We cannot afford to lose another mine. One of my friends in Roundup, what a powerful statement that was. Not only do we need to support our current existing jobs, especially these high-wage jobs in the mining industry, but we can't afford to lose another mine. I mean, we just got the devastating news of hundreds of layoffs at the Stillwater mine, the platinum and palladium mine here in Montana. And so we can't afford to lose another mine, but yet mining in America is under attack. Mining in Montana is under attack. And so we've got to stand up for coal. I was so glad to hear this news late last week that there was going to be a rally for coal in Roundup, Montana, this Friday afternoon. In fact, when I got the email from a friend and a listener in Roundup, I was actually wearing the very same Montana Coal t-shirt that I'm wearing right now. I wore the shirt again on Saturday night when I got into the octagon at the Fusion Fights in Great Falls, because this is a fight that we have all got to get in on now and stand up for these jobs. But the mayor of Roundup, Sandra Jones, is actually helping to put this whole thing together. And Mayor Jones, thank you so much for joining us in studio here. It's great to see you.
Thank you for inviting me. I really appreciate the opportunity to share Roundup's support for coal. Roundup was established, incorporated in 1909, and it was actually built on coal. And the railroad came because of the coal. So actually, between the coal and the railroad, the city exists today. And so knowing that and understanding that, we understand that coal is also the ugly stepchild of mining. Of all of the mining that there is, and there's a war against all of it, coal seems to get hit the hardest, I believe.
Well, you know, and it's what you just told me about Roundup, Montana. I had former Bozeman Mayor Krause, I think he was still mayor at the time, he told me the very same thing about Bozeman, Montana.
Is that right?
Same thing, that Bozeman is here because of coal and because of the railroads. That's why Bozeman is here. And, you know, a lot of highline towns, you know, they were put there because of agriculture, and then the railroad came in, and that's how the highline got developed. But, yeah, a lot of communities just like yours, that's why they're even here in the first place.
Yeah, exactly. Of course, there's a lot of ranching and things like that, but the city of Roundup was established with that intent. And it is the county seat from Musselshell County, where Signal Peak Energy is home to. And Signal Peak Energy has been a great partner for the city of Roundup. I remember during the floods of 2011, there was a lot of chaos, a lot of confusion, a lot of people misplaced, and a long time recovery. But Signal Peak Energy was very helpful at the very onslaught of that. They invested $25,000 and gave that to the Ministerial Association to appropriate to people that was in need. And shortly after that, they established a community foundation. And with that community foundation, they have hosted hundreds of projects in Musselshell County. Roundup has received a lot of good projects. And one of the things we want to do at this coal rally is to showcase not only Signal Peak Energy, but what the coal industry has done through the Montana Coal Board. And the coal severance tax, I mean, former Senator Dwayne Agnew will quickly tell you that there's coal dust in every schoolhouse in Montana.
That's right.
And so
in the form of dollars.
In the form of dollars, you better believe it. And so this coal severance tax helps to fund the coal board. And thankfully, last year, or at the last legislative session, Representative Perry got the coal board funded permanently, which was a good thing. And I sit on that board as well. So the coal has bought a lot of things, helped a lot of small communities impacted by coal. And so we want to showcase all of that at this rally. A lot of people may not understand where all this stuff comes from. Well, when you have a small city like Roundup with a very low tax base, you really count on grants to help you. And I'm thankful that there's grant funding out there for communities such as ours. But the coal industry has been a great partner for us.
Well, and we know that, you know, even though these are high-wage jobs at Signal Peak, at the coal mine south of Roundup, third-largest taxpayer in Musselshell County, you were telling me before we kicked off the show this morning.
It's actually the third. It's a third of the tax base.
A third of the tax base. Yeah,
yeah.
Not third largest.
A third of the tax base.
Thank you. Yeah, huge part of the tax base. High wage job provider, bringing in so much to the county, and then other economic benefits into Roundup, but Billings benefits as well.
Yes.
The whole state benefits from that coal mining development. Why did you feel it was so important to do this pro coal rally right now?
I think because Signal Peak's struggling to stay afloat. There's three bills right now that Senator Daines is sponsoring in Washington, D.C. to hopefully keep the mine operating. Without one of these bills being passed, they're in grave danger of laying off by the end of the year and possibly shutting down operations next year, which would be devastating. And not only that, heartbreaking to leave all this treasure unharvested within our treasure state. That just breaks my heart. There's people that is blessed by the coal that is harvested, not only those that work and live there, but the countries that receive the benefit of the coal that they harvest. I think Japan is one of their largest customers, and they have coal-fired plants right in the heart of Japan, and they don't seem to have an issue with the dirtiness of coal. And if you've ever studied anything about Japan, you know it's a very clean country.
That's right. Yeah,
very clean country.
Coal gasification plants after they had the problems with Fukushima. And we've seen these left-wing federal judges here in Montana have been ruling against Signal Peak, trying to shut down the coal industry just like they shut down the timber industry in large swaths of Montana. So important that everybody gets out. I know you mentioned Dwayne Ankeny. I know he's going to be there.
He's going to be there.
Yeah, our friends from Colstrip will be in Roundup. Mayor John Williams and more. Hold that thought back right after this.
Taking your calls live. 406-294-0970. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
I just had an email from one of our listeners in Libby, Montana. The Disney family said, hey, where's the details on this coal rally in Roundup? I've got a flyer in hand. I will get that on our Montana Talks website here later this morning. I just wanted to get all the info from the mayor first, and then we can use the information she's providing with us today to add to that story. But
four to six Friday afternoon at the Roundup City Park at the stage area. Mike Morgan's going to be helping us do the emceeing part. If anyone's familiar with Mike Morgan and his music, he's going to open with a song and close with a song. I'm big on music. And we have a host of speakers that's going to be informing us about the history of coal, specifically in Musselshell County and Signal Peak Mine, and just speakers from across the board. John Williams is an articulate speaker, and so is Dwayne Ankeny. Kind of the down-home feel that you're going to feel there in Roundup, but we want to welcome you and make you comfortable and help you enjoy coming to Roundup and enjoying the rally.
Food trucks, too.
Food trucks going to be there. Back porch is going to be catering the food for the event, and we're going to showcase a lot of equipment that's been purchased with coal dollars. Some of the speakers is, as I said, Dwayne Ankeny, John Williams, Representative O'Blander is going to be there, Alan Olson, a former senator, also a lobbyist in Helena that lobbies for coal, oil, and gas, and just all-around good guy. But he knows the history of Signal Peak specifically. He was instrumental.
Oh, yeah. When I first got back from Iraq in 2006, well, first off, Alan Olson and I, when I was student government president at the University of Montana, my friend Jake Eaton and I did a listening session across eastern Montana because we were telling folks back at UM, hey, you know, coal dollars fund scholars. So we went to Roundup and Alan put together a listening session. We met with some local folks but remember in the early 2000s, this was just an idea.
Right.
This Signal Peak coal mine now, it was just an idea. It was an idea by Alan Olson and he worked closely with then Governor Judy March there were a lot of people who just thought this was some pie in the sky idea by Alan Olson and it was never going to happen. Fast forward to 2006, the fall of 06, I'm working for the TV station, and Alan invites me to come up to, I just got back from Iraq that summer, he invites me to come up to Roundup, to come up, is it Klein Road? What's that
Klein,
road?
Yeah, Klein Road, yeah.
I remember, because it was an icy road that day, so I had a couple scratches on my pickup, but that's all right. But anyway, he invites me up to the mine location. There was it looked like a farmhouse. There was only a couple of buildings there and a little yellow light on. And he said, they're going to make this thing happen. And then they started laying out the maps. We're going to have rail routes here and we got to ship it out here. And they made it happen.
Yeah.
And now we gotta fight to make sure it keeps happening.
That's right. Exactly. And the railroad was a big plus for it. And their coal is shipped out of Canada, not the U.S. side. So it goes on up and goes out that way. But so far, I think they've done a beautiful job of reclamation of what they've reclaimed. They can take you on a tour. I go out every once in a while. I actually went on my first underground tour this past year, and it's not something I want to do again.
I did the underground tour event, and I was like, okay, all right.
Yeah, hats off to those that can do it. But, I did go back pretty far in there, but it was really interesting, and but when you take the tour above ground, it looks just great. And I don't know if people know this or not, but after the mine closes and part of the whole end deal of the thing, they have 10 years to reclaim everything. That's what I've been told anyway, what I understand. So I know it's going to look fine when they're done. And what they've been doing in the process, how they're helping in the process, not only with tax dollars, but as a good neighbor to their neighbors. Signal Peak Energy has been a good friend, and I plug them every chance I get. But not just there. I would support coal if it was in Helena, if it was in Libby.
Yeah.
Wherever it's at, I support fossil fuel.
Just mining,
and
period.
Just mining, period.
Well, that's my thing. Like, it is so such a gut punch, and Senator Steve Daines mentioned this in this tele-town hall meeting we did last night. It's just a gut punch what happened to our friends and some of us family members at the Stillwater Mine, but hopefully we can get that back up and running when we get away from these Green New Deal-style policies. But, like, you know, look at the way that they have been, this war on American mining has been slowing down the process to get the mine in White Sulphur Springs up and running. You mentioned Libby. There's miners in Libby that fly to Alaska to be miners and then fly home to Libby. We have, you know, literally gold under their feet near Libby and Troy and everything. And yet the radical left constantly blocks those. So not only do we need to get these new mines up and running, we got to fight to defend what we got here, because it often gets spun in the news. Well, this coal mine's trying to get an expansion. No, you don't understand how this works. They need to expand because they mined this piece of ground. They need to expand to another piece of ground just to simply stay running. And that's part of what they're trying to do.
Yeah, exactly. And the Crow Revenue Act is a great, great way of getting it out of federal hands and putting it into private ownership. And there is a little bit of repercussions for that, but a whole lot better for the life of the mine, because you never know from one administration to the next what the policies are going to be. And I do know I'm also a minister, and from years before the mine opened, we went out there and prayed over that site.
Wow.
And then it wasn't, but a couple years later, here's Alan on the scene with Judy Martz and different ones, moving it forward, pushing the can forward. And but I'm just really proud of what they've done and what they're doing, and I just want to do everything we can to show support for that industry. And the city of Roundup is a strong supporter. We're pretty much a red county, red city, very red. But I do also understand that you have to work across the aisle to get things done. I feel like that, you know, it's fine to have your ideals, but you need to govern somewhat from the middle for the whole people. And so I would probably not be called a very good one if I was in politics. but I do understand governing is a little bit different than campaigning.
Well, I think, and we don't need to get into that. You know, people get filled with enough politics right now. But I think it would be very – you mentioned Steve Daines is pushing all three of these bills right now. If the Republicans take back control of the United States Senate – President Trump is encouraging him to run for Senate Majority Leader. He could potentially be the first Senate Majority Leader from Montana since Mike Mansfield. A lot of people don't understand the significance of what that type of political power could actually do. It could mean huge things for Roundup. It could mean huge things for St. Mary's and for water projects and everything, aside from just, you know, saving our country from all the other things that we talk about on a day-to-day basis. And then federal judges. These federal judges are ruling against Roundup.
Yeah.
They've ruled against coal strip.
Yeah.
They've ruled against the timber industry. It's just outrageous.
Well, and they're kicking the can for the environmental impact study. You know, not following their own timelines that they set, which puts the mine in jeopardy, because they can't continue hanging on without that. And so, like I said, Senator Daines has three different bills he's sponsoring. If one of them gets passed and signed by the president, the mine will be able to continue. But if not, it's very much in jeopardy.
Wow. That's the urgency of this pro-coal rally this Friday, 4 to 6 in Roundup. Let's sneak in a quick phone call here since we're getting short on time. Mary in Livingston, did you have a quick question or comment?
Well, I just got in on the conversation about Roundup Coal, and bless your heart for having the meeting and keeping coal going. These tree hugger people have just caused too many problems, and I wondered if you have information on the status of coal strip, because we need to keep it going too.
Thank you very much, Mary. Yeah, and I know the mayor from coal strip will be there too.
Yeah, Mayor Williams will be able to speak more into that at the rally, but I do know that Northwest Energy has picked up the torch there somewhere and is helping the process, whatever that process is. They know the details of it, but yeah, we absolutely support coal strip operations. It jeopardizes our grid to not have that coal-fired burning plant down there going now, but to close the other one is scary. So anyway, I'm sure that Senator Ankeny and Mayor John Williams will have some things to say about that.
Good point about the electrical grid. The mine in Roundup needs electricity to run their mine. So does the mine in Butte, Montana, and which is why the mine in Butte has said if we lose coal strip, we could potentially lose our mine in Butte as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
So another great great point. Thanks, Mary, for that call. Mark in Park City, did you have a quick question or comment?
Well, I know probably, Aaron, you probably got it on your fingertips, but what was the quote that Reagan said about if you want to, you know, stifle something, just regulate it?
Oh, yeah, there's a great Reagan quote about, you know, then tax it, then regulate, then, something. I should memorize that quote, but I'll be able to find it at least during one of the breaks here or something. Yeah. Anything else you wanted to share here with the mayor around?
Well, I saw this thing the other day that said it was a banner some farmer put up, said, you can't eat red tape. And that's no fooling. I mean, I thought, now that is just right there.
You can't eat red tape well, and you don't want to eat that fake meat either. Mayor Sandra Jones, I found the Reagan quote here. If it moves, tax it. If it keeps moving, regulate it. And if it stops moving, subsidize it. But anyway, less than a minute to go. What do you want to tell folks all across Montana? And thank you so much for your time.
Please come if you're close by, and if you're out for a Friday afternoon drive, stop in at the rally and show your support for coal. And we welcome you to come and showcase. We're showcasing all the equipment. So you'll see a ladder fire truck and a lot of nice things out there that coal dollars have paid for. You hear some good speakers with common sense solutions and just basically a lot of good support for the coal industry.
Well, I know when folks needed to rally for agriculture in Malta a few years ago when the BLM director showed up, there were folks outside of agriculture that showed up for ag. So I think there's going to be a lot of folks outside of coal and outside of coal mining towns that are going to show up in support of coal and show up in support of Roundup as well. So they might need some more of these coal T-shirts.
I hope so.
These are great shirts.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see you Friday afternoon.
Thank you. Thank you.
Mayor,
thank you for having me.
Yeah, Mayor Sandra Jones, great to see you. Thank you so much for your time. The Polaris Dawn mission pilot who was on that space mission last week, they trained in Montana. We're going to follow up with him right after this, right here on Montana Talks. So back right after this quick break here on the show.
This is where Montana Talks at with Lane Nordlund.
Last week, Northern Livestock Video Auction concluded its 2024 video sale season with its annual fall premiere sale. In the offering were over 11,500 head of feeder cattle that were sold. Feeder steers weighing 5 to 5.5, priced at $298 up to $337. 5.5 to 6 weights, $3 to $3.30, with the 6 to 6.5 weight steers, $234 to $297. Heifers weighing 5 to 5.5, 258 to 301, 5.5 to 6 weight heifers, 255 to 280. We'll talk about replacements next.
Join the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. NCBA is the oldest and largest national cattle industry organization working to defend your interests in Washington, D.C. And there are big benefits to being a member. You'll get news you can use in the National Cattlemen, email updates in the NCBA Beef Bulletin, plus big discounts only for NCBA members. Join by calling 866-233-3872 or online at ncba.org.
Just under 2,000 head of replacement cattle sold on the Northern Livestock Video Auction this past week. Bred cows brought $2,150 up to $2,335, while bred heifers ranged anywhere from $2,300 up to $2,700 for those bred heifers. I'm Lane Northland.
Hey. If you can plan barbecues and weddings, you can plan to protect yourself from a natural disaster. Sign up for local alerts, prepare an emergency kit, and make a family communications plan. Get started at ready.gov/plan.
Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Provided.
Talking about the issues that matter to Montana, statewide. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Oh, this is so cool. You know, we caught up with the SpaceX Polaris Dawn crew before they went into space. So it finally dawned on me a couple of days ago, we better catch up with them after their mission in space, especially since they trained for that mission in part right here in Montana. Yeah, I heard the news live on Fox and Friends here just a little over a week ago while I was headed into our radio studios one morning. The Polaris Dawn crew conducting the first ever commercial spacewalk. It was about 1 year ago. We had the mission pilot, Scott Kidd Poteet, on the show right here on Montana Talks, talking about their training mission that was about to get underway in Bozeman. And he was the mission pilot for this successful space mission as well. Kidd Poteet, great to have you back here on Montana Talks. What an honor.
Absolutely. It's an honor to speak with you guys this morning. We love Montana. It's been a while since we've been there, but we should get back there shortly.
Well, before we talk about the spacewalk, walk us through your training mission that you did here in Montana, because I remember you describing what you were about to do before you did the training. But describe the training you did in the Montana airspace and how that prepared you for this successful mission.
Absolutely. So we spent about the last 2.5 years preparing for this space flight. It's a very focused developmental mission where we had four primary objectives. We wanted to complete the first ever commercial spacewalk. We wanted to go higher than anyone has been since Apollo 17 in 1972 with regard to Earth orbit altitude. We wanted to test Starlink laser-based communication for the very first time from space. And then lastly, we wanted to accomplish about 40 science and research experiments. So the fact that we had to dedicate the last 2.5 years to training for this, we go through a very rigorous syllabus, and that includes flying fighter jets. You know, I come from an Air Force background. I flew F-16s for 20 years all over the world. And Jared has an aviation background as well on the civilian side, but he's an overachiever and very successful individual, so he kind of worked up the ranks in the civilian aviation world, from basic single-engine aircraft all the way through fighter jets. So he's got a hangar right there in Bozeman where he housed a fleet of fighter jets, and we use those for training purposes, you know, working in the aviation environment and flying in close proximity to each other in formations, and we can exercise some of the things that we do on space, to include checklist procedures, building trust as a team, kind of getting the other crew members comfortable in uncomfortable scenarios with all the restrictive gear that we fly with and working in three dimensions. So it's very applicable to what we experienced on orbit, and we continue to train that way to this day.
Yeah, that's incredible. Man, it'd be cool to meet Jared Isaacman one of these days. He was the mission commander, and I understand he's got a house in the Bozeman area as well, but that hangar sounds incredible. So all his fighter jets are still there, so this is ongoing. This wasn't just for this training mission then.
No, it's an ongoing. So the Polaris program is actually up to 3 spaceflight missions, and Polaris Dawn, the one we just concluded, we splashed down just over a week ago last Sunday. And so this will be an ongoing over the next 5 to 10 years as they progress through the follow-on missions of Polaris.
Before before I forget, since you just mentioned splashing down about 1 week ago, we want to talk about what it was like actually being in space, but what was the splashdown itself like?
It was actually very intense, and I can certainly talk about the launch itself, the ride uphill, but in the deorbit sequence, coming down from space, we spent about 5 days on orbit, and you're deconditioned, meaning we're used, as humans, we're used to being on Earth at 1G. You know, you're utilizing, you're engaging your core, your muscles, your ligaments, your tendons, you know, all the time. In space, you're not using any of those body parts. You're simply floating around to get around, and it's almost meditative. But spending 5 days or more, you know, in space, you're deconditioned. You're not used to the gravity of Earth. So as you reenter the Earth's atmosphere, you know, you're going 18,000 miles an hour in order to maintain orbital velocity to stay up there. But at some point, you got to come home. And as you reenter the Earth's atmosphere, you're engulfed in this plasma of fire. And it's the capsule hitting the atmosphere, which creates a lot of drag and ultimately was what slows you down. But as you deaccelerate, you're feeling all these G-forces. And we pull about 4.5 Gs on reentry. And these are similar G-forces that we experience flying fighter jets, but it's a slightly different axis. It's through the chest versus from head to toe, which you experience in a fighter jet. But the thing about spaceflight and the reentry phase is that it's a longer duration. You know, you're feeling these G-forces for about 7 to 8 minutes, and it feels like someone's sitting on your chest. And it's a violent ride until those chutes come out, when there's just this sudden boom. The drug chutes come out, the parachute comes out, and then you float on and splash down in the water. This vehicle only lands in the water. It's off the coast of Florida. And SpaceX is right there with their recovery ship. They pick you up. They put you on the deck of the ship, and they take you out, do a medical assessment, and then they fly us in a helicopter to reunite with our families back at Kennedy Space Center.
Wow. It's so incredible. You know, now a year and a half ago, if you had just told me the same thing you just mentioned, I would have been kind of lost in space. But but a year ago, August, we had the U.S. Navy's Blue Angels in town for the big Yellowstone International Air Show. They had two media.
The who?
Yeah, you're an Air Force guy. You're like, who? Who? Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, but I was so blessed, so lucky. I got to be one of two media folks that got to fly in the back seat of the F-18, you know, without a G suit, with the, and so it was crazy. So I think the bird that I was flying along with, we pulled 7.3 Gs, but it was crazy. But you know, people would ask me, what was it like? And I would say when we punched straight into the sky, and you know, 7.3 Gs, I think we got above 20,000 feet, but even at just 20,000 feet, I said it felt like we were in space, because eventually you get those, what is it, negative Gs or zero Gs. And there was a second where I was just felt like I was just floating in the sky, looking straight into the atmosphere, and I was like, wow, now I understand why people want to go to space.
Yeah, so the second best jet team behind the Thunderbirds. So I flew with the Thunderbirds 15 years ago as the number four pilot. And one of the best experiences during my time on the team was to give those incentive flights to media and journalists and broadcasters. And because you're exposing, you know, the general public to a world that is just unfamiliar you know, experiencing those G-forces is pretty intense. But the uniqueness of what spaceflight compared to flying a fighter jet, it's a slightly different axis. And, you know, you're flying a fighter jet, which is energy depleting. You cannot sustain that 7.5, 8, 9 Gs for very long. It's like maybe 30 seconds. And then there's this concern of passing out based on the pooling of blood in the lower extremities. In spaceflight, the duration, granted, they're about 4.5 Gs, but you're deconditioned, so 4.5 feels like 5.5 to 6 Gs, and you're exposed to them for 7-8 minutes. And so it's just this, it's more of an endurance event than like this intense high interval kind of CrossFit exercise you experience in flying a fighter jet.
Well, now you tell us that, that the Blue Angels are the second best, but I've only flown with the Blue Angels. I'm going to have to fly with you and Jared Eisenman.
I see what you did there.
I got to compare the two. I got to compare the two. I can't just take your word for it now, you know.
Yeah, so we'll have to get you out to the airport and fly the MiG-29 or the Alpha Jet. They still do air shows. It never gets old, I'll tell you that much, flying close proximity, inches apart, pulling those 4Gs. So,
oh, man.
Yeah, it's good training.
I'm there. You tell me when to be there. I will be there. I will be on the flight deck. Oh, it was absolutely incredible. And this is an Army guy talking. I was like, holy cow, that was so cool. I can't even describe how cool it was. I got to take a quick break here in about 20 seconds. Polaris Dawn mission pilot Kid Petit is able to stick with us for the rest of the hour. Two big things I wanted to ask him about, and maybe he's got something else he wants to talk about. One, what was it like being up there, just being in space, and then the spacewalk, seeing the spacewalk right there as well. And I'd be interested, what were the big takeaways from the scientific experiments that they wanted to conduct up there as well? So stand by, shortest break of the hour right now.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
So it's so great to have Polaris Dawn mission pilot Kid Petit back on the show with us here on Montana Talks. And Kid, feel free, tell our listeners whatever you think they might find the most interesting. But yeah, really the two big questions I wanted to get your take on is, the scientific experiments that you guys did while you were up in space, and just what was it like being in space and to be there for this first ever commercial space walk. And then the other question I just thought of is, it's not a SpaceX crew, it's not these Polaris Dawn crew, but there's those other astronauts who got stuck in space. Are you going to be part of the crew that Elon Musk will send in to go rescue them a few months from now?
What a great question. To answer your question right off the bat, no, I will not be a part of the crew that goes to rescue them. Crew 9 will be launching shortly in the coming days from Kennedy Space Center aboard a Dragon capsule Falcon 9 rocket. Typically, they're a crew of 4, and they'll do a 6-month rotation on the ISS. This time, they're only going to send 2 up there, part of the original crew that have been training at NASA. These are NASA astronauts. And then they will bring home Peggy and Butch in the spring, late winter, early spring sometime. So, no, I will not be participating in that.
Well, but that's great of Elon to do that, and the whole team there, everybody.
So, two of our big milestones. One was the first ever commercial spacewalk, and the second one was to do 40 science and research experiments. As far as the spacewalk is concerned, this is the first time a non-government organization, in this case SpaceX, has ever performed a spacewalk, also known as an extravehicular activity, an EVA. So you'll hear that term interchangeable with spacewalk. And it required the SpaceX team to develop a brand new suit, something that has taken 40-plus years other organizations to create and develop. It's the same one that they've been using for decades up on the ISS. And they were able to do it just in a simple 2.5 years. It's an unbelievable suit. It has certain enhancements that they've been working on that will now they'll take the technology and all the lessons learned they have from our flight as well as the development and create new suits for the future. Ultimately creating a suit that will be used by hundreds, if not thousands, of people walking on the lunar surface and eventually Mars. So this is just kind of the beginning of this next chapter of space exploration. And and to be a part of that. You know, we were in our Dragon capsule, and there's no airlock, meaning there's no additional chambers to go in to depressurize and repressurize. We had to bring the entire capsule down to vacuum, meaning all four of us were in the same type of EVA suit that was developed by the SpaceX. So this is the first time in spaceflight history where four individuals were involved in the same spacewalk at the same time.
And what do you think of being in space, just looking out across it? Because, you know, it seems like we take a lot of this for granted because we've seen so much of it in movies. We've seen a lot of the NASA videos. But how incredible is it truly to look out upon the Earth?
It's absolutely mesmerizing. There is such an amazing glow to our planet. And it's perfection from looking down from 1,400 kilometers. It's the highest anyone's been in over 50 years. And to see just the light alone from the planet the dawn, the sun rises and the sun sets. We saw them every 106 minutes. My favorite was probably the sunrise. It would start off with this just blue sliver along the horizon, and you would start to see the rays of the sun pop out, and then all of a sudden the sun would crest, and it would light up the entire planet in our capsule, and it was just blinding light. It's absolutely amazing. It's really hard to articulate and describe how beautiful it is, but it is life-changing, and it changes your perspective on how you view the Earth and this planet. And you crave it. You know, it's ironic because you're up there. You're concealed to this tin can. You're in this capsule. You can't smell nature. You can't feel it. You can't feel the weather, the breeze. But you crave it because you just see this beauty. It's something I definitely wanted to get back into. You know, Montana is absolutely gorgeous. I can't wait to get back to Montana and just explore nature.
Yeah, speaking of taking things for granted, we forget how much we have right here out our front doorstep that we so often take for granted. So many places all across Montana that even lifelong residents still have not seen. And, you know, a lake you still haven't hiked to, a river you still haven't floated. And so that it's interesting to see that seeing Earth from afar, that's what you think of.
Absolutely. And, you know, I wish everyone could experience it, but this is just the first step. You know, this is a developmental mission, and we hope this is the stepping stone for future missions where more and more people get to experience space travel and to see Earth from those perspectives.
Well, Kid Petit, I'm looking forward to seeing you at that hangar in Bozeman. I don't know what kind of, you know, flight suit you got for me, but whatever, I'm there. I'll take the MiG, or what was the other one?
Alpha Jet, there's MiGs, there's L-39s, you know, everyone's got an airplane.
You pick, I'm good with any of them, that sounds incredible. All right, great to have you, thanks for your time.